Brandon, how'd you write Greatest Love Story?
It really was just me and a guitar.
Don't you think that changed your life? The fact that you made that decision.
Yeah, it 100% changed my life. And he goes, what do you want to, like, why are you calling me? You're supposed to say truck, and you're supposed to say beer, and you're supposed to make sure every chorus is the same, and the song has to be under 3 minutes.
Were you given a fair shot to put out the second record in a timely manner?
No, we were not given a fair shot.
Brandon Lancaster is on the podcast today, in the studio. Fresh off the road?
Fresh off the road of, like, visiting family for Thanksgiving and stuff, but not off the tour road.
Where do you go? You go home? Aren't you from here?
I'm from here.
You're from here. So yep. Where do you go for Thanksgiving?
My wife is from Georgia, so we go down there.
Oh,
we do,
God.
Like, Thanksgiving there, then they all come here for Christmas. So.
But didn't you meet your wife in high school?
College.
Oh, in college. Oh, yeah. College sweethearts.
Yeah.
And she's from Georgia.
She's from Georgia, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we do that. That's my... I'm getting rid of my phone right now. This is so unprofessional. Just
no,
I should have done this.
Care.
I could have done this 15 seconds
there
earlier.
There was so much time for you to ditch the phone.
I know.
And you didn't.
Well, I was getting notifications, and I was like, it'll go away, but apparently I'm popular right at this moment. All day I haven't had a notification, then right when I sit down.
Right when you sit down in the chair is when the notifications start coming in.
Yeah.
Brandon, how'd you write Greatest Love Story?
With a guitar and melody. The song started out, it really was just me and a guitar, and just kind of, you know, when you write, there's lots of different processes and different ways a song comes to be. This one in particular is one of the, I didn't have anything to write about. I was messing with tunings. So I put in this, like, open, kind of like John Mellencamp tuning. And
is it in an open tuning?
Yeah.
Open E?
It's an open G, kind of a variation of open G. It's a tuning we kind of want. It's not common. I kind of made it up. I was really just messing with tuning and just like this open tuning. And sometimes, like, if you're a songwriter, a new instrument or new tuning, like, those kind of things can create, I don't know, they create an idea in your head or they inspire you. And the song started with that for, I was just.
Wait. So what is the tuning?
Open G.
But tuned how? You said you made it up. So it's.
Yeah.
So it's
so
D.
It's, D,
G,
G,
D,
D,
G, B,
B,
D.
D, yeah.
Yeah. That's not
okay,
open
so
G.
Have you ever played an open G?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never I've never, like, played.
Honky Tonk Woman is in that tune.
Okay. Well, yeah. So I was listening to a lot of Rolling Stones. Open tunings in general, like, I just will make one. I'll just, like, do it and then play, and it's like, is this open G or is this open G with a flat or, like,
no, that's the Honky Tonk Women tonight.
Okay, so that's open G.
Yeah.
Okay, see, all these years later,
so you tuned the guitar to open G.
Yeah.
And then what?
Okay, well, that's where, yeah, so
yeah,
I'm just playing it strumming. It started with, they said I was nothing but a troublemaker, never up to no good, you're the perfect all-American girl, wouldn't touch me. So that's, like, totally autobiographical. Like, my wife and I, when we met in college, I was a bit of a troublemaker, and she was definitely, you know, an all-American girl, the good girl, you know, whatever.
Does that literally just come out of you, though?
Yeah, literally just
it
came
just,
out of me.
And if you knew you were going to be singing the song this many years later, would you have picked a better line, or do you go, that's a good line? That's a good line?
I don't start doing that early in the process. Like, I'll just start. I'll say this. I had no idea when I was writing that line that, yeah, it was going to stick with me for the rest of my life. I'll say this, though, at that time in my life, and this is what all writers, artists, I challenge them and myself to get back to, is that naive kind of feeling when you're writing, that innocence, that this is, I just like it. I like it. It feels good. And I'm just singing it out and I feel good about it. Not like, well, are people going to, I don't know, would that resonate with, are there a lot of troublemakers out there? And are there a lot of all-American girls? Should I make it more international? Should I, like, you know, these things that you can overthink. I just liked it. And I will say, though, I wouldn't think that early. It was just spitting lines out. And I started writing the story of my wife and I, kind of this over, I didn't, like, totally have the verse. I went then to the chorus and, you know, I was going to be forever. And we weren't even engaged at the time, but I was gonna be here forever, you're gonna be my wife, that whole thing. The chorus kind of shaped up, then I started going back to the verse, because it was a little, like, my wife and I, we met in college, it was more autobiographical, and I was like, hey, so the heart of my stories are, the heart of my wife and I is in the song, but I want to make it I just want to change some of the details. So I turned a little more of a, like, we were in college together, she went away, and we spent time apart and broke up, whatever, and I was howling at the moon, that whole thing. And then got back together in Nashville and went out for some drinks and figured things out and got back together, and that's the end of the song. But I just changed some details, I don't know, just to make it a little more not totally on the nose of my life. And there are things that, to me, that song, the heart of that song are lines like, I was what you wanted, you were what I needed, we can meet in between. Like, that's a line that resonated with me really intensely. And then over the years, people have said, like, that kind of the balance of a relationship and also the journey of a relationship. It's not just this Friday night, you meet in a bar, let's go home and everything's perfect. It's this, hey, we got together and then we kind of fell apart and we had to work some things out and figure out who we were and then get back together and talk about it. That song, I think, just the journey of love and the journey of a love story being a journey and being something that takes a while to figure out. It may not be just a Friday night. I think that's why that song has resonated with so many people. And it's been special to watch.
Wait, why is that a great line, that you were what I was what you wanted, you were what I needed,
and we could meet in between?
And we can meet in between.
I think that the idea of two people, you both need each other, you both want each other, but in that moment you're realizing that it's meeting in the middle. There's a compromise of desire and emotion and also what you need from each other. And I think the meeting in between, like, let's meet in between, of you have things, I'm what you want, you're what I need. But then it also flips around too, because there are actually things here that, you know, you might need a little bit of a troublemaker in your life. You know, you might, and just that compromise, that offering what you both have for each other, and meeting in that place, to create a love story. I think that's, and yeah, maybe it's not a good line. Maybe people that have told me it's resonated with them,
maybe they're just lying to
they're,
you.
They're lying. They just don't know what else to say.
No, I don't think
in
that's
that
it.
Moment.
Is it true that somebody who tried to get you to change the line from car to truck, is that true?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to rat them out, but I think this would be the platform to do it if
yeah.
you did want to do it.
All right. In the camera, and it was no.
What kind of was it? Someone at the label?
We didn't. This was like pre-label, when I was just starting to like be with some songwriters in Nashville. Multiple songwriters were like, if I would do a round. Afterwards, then I had a publisher. I had two different publishers telling me, like, man, I love that song. You know, if you changed it to, you know, like just that truck, like, right, it sets that kind of country, like, you know, it's just that. And at the time, it was like the bro country wave, and everything was get in my truck, girl. You know, and so it's just, hey, you already got to fight so many battles. That's one battle you want to fight. It's like, it'll be another truck song. That's a good thing. Like, it's a, and it to me. The reality is, I had at the car at the time. I had a car. Like, I wanted a truck, but gas was just so expensive, and driving around Nashville in a truck, I was like, I'm just gonna keep my Pontiac. So I had a car, and that was, you know, she was riding shotgun in my car. And then there's another, which I got made fun of on TikTok for it a couple times, which I love, is the third verse of that song. So you came back after a long 4 years. Your college boyfriend didn't work out. So you got years and out. So in songwriting, it'd be like A B. So years and out, we went out for a couple of, it should be beers, to find out who we are now, right? So does that make sense?
Explain it to me one more time. All right,
and the rhyme scheme, so.
Oh, we're talking rhyme scheme. Yeah.
So the rhyme scheme should be, you came back after a long 4 years, your college boyfriend didn't work out. So we went out for a couple of beers to find out who we are now.
Right.
That rhymes perfectly. That's A-B-A-B.
Right. That's
I say we went out for a couple of drinks to find out who we are now. What's funny is...
Wait, so what is it?
It's drinks.
But sing it in context. So it's...
We went out for a couple of drinks to find out who we are now. So it doesn't rhyme with years. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay. So, but that's frustrated some songwriter, because it's like, it hits your ear weird.
But that's genius, because when you delay the rhyme, it forces you to pay attention to wait for the next rhyme. That's what Oscar Hammerstein always said.
Yeah, and I get all my inspiration from Oscar Hammerstein.
Right, of
course. And so, no.
No bigger impact on Rodgers and Hammerstein than Brandon Lancaster over here.
Exactly. but I literally did that, though, not even to intentionally try to make people listen. It just was like, I was thinking about our story, and I was like, well, you know, we went downtown, and we didn't get beer. My wife doesn't really drink beer. Like, we ordered drinks. Like, I got an old fashioned, and she got like a vodka.
But why did you feel like you had to be so literal?
Because at the time, this isn't going to go out to millions of people. I'm not going to sing. At the time.
But hold on. Isn't every song you're writing because of your ego at the time? Don't you think it's going to go? Don't you think everyone's going to hear? No. Isn't that the goal?
No, that's the goal. But I'm enough of a realist. And I think I've also been writing songs for a long time. At that point, I've been writing songs for years that you just have to write. You're going to be performing this in some round. You're going to be playing a show and there's going to be like 10 people there. And that may be as good as it's going to get. And so you better really feel convicted about what you're writing and you're singing. And at the time, it's like, well, I know my, at the time, she's my girlfriend. I know my girlfriend's going to like hear this. And so she'll kind of know I'm talking about us, and she'll maybe think like, oh yeah, we went out for drinks that one night. And it's really for her. And then maybe it's for my friends. And then maybe it's for like the 10 fans we have. And then maybe, and you kind of stay there. Even now, I don't know. I think that if you try to think like the whole world's going to be, I think you can get into a dicey situation if you're thinking like, all right, so we're sitting in front of 50,000 people, because you can't figure out what all 50,000 people, and what if you're not in front of 50,000 people? You might be playing it just, even when you're, I say it all works and it's all great, one day you might be 65 years old walking into a little round and you're like, back in the day, you know, I played, and there's only 7 people there, and there, you better like what you're singing, and you better like what you're, because you, it's, you're the only one left with it at the end of the day, you know. And so I think that way. And at the time, I was thinking that way. I was like, you know, this is my song and my story, and I want it, and it's my now wife. It's her story. And so I want to be as close as it can be. And here's like little details that are my details that are important to me, and I want them to be in the song because we may be the only people that ever hear the song.
You love this song. Is that
I do, yeah,
fair to
yeah, oh,
say?
Yeah, I still, all these years later, I still love the song. I'm very happy. I'll say this. That's when you're talking about like your ego and hearing people. That's been and I've talked to a lot of artists, and songwriters don't have to deal with this as much. Artists, because you're the one getting on the stage, you deal with this like, I have to live with this song. Like, what if Greatest Love Story wouldn't have been the one? Because we do have some songs, none really that we've released. We've had some songs that have been close that they didn't end up even being released. It's like, dude, if that was the one, and I had to sing that every night, and that's how I was defined, and that, like, I don't know, I might, and so I think Greatest Love Story, because it's cool, it's organic, it's honest, it's just a great country song. I'm proud of it. I've definitely written some songs that honestly I haven't made to the end of, because I'm like, you know what, maybe this is cool, maybe it's fun. What if I have the same amount of success? I can't do it. Like, I can't sing this song. I've like ended that song halfway through it before, because I've been like, I'm not gonna run the risk of me. I already, we're 2 courses in, I already like hate this song. And so even right. If it sounds like a hit, it's a smash, maybe we can finish it and pitch it to someone else, but I'm just not gonna sing this song.
Whatever Lanco is at, whatever level that Lanco is at right now, how much day-to-day are you determined and blood, sweat, and tears fighting to take it to whatever the next level is? Are you constantly trying to do that and to level up? Or do you think, I just want to keep touring, and if we can sustain where we are, that's a beautiful thing?
That's a good question. The answer is both of those things, depending on what mood I'm in the day, honestly. There are some days where there's just this tenacity and this ferocity and this, like, I'm an extremely competitive person, and there's days where you wake up and it's like, hey, yeah, level up. Like, what do we got to do? What is it going to take? Who do we got to beat? What content do we have? Whatever it is, like, what's the game that this is, and how do we continue to win at the game? How do we continue to at least compete? And not just in a way that's like hacking the system, like, true, like, how do we engage our fans? Like, how do we engage our fans in a way that other people aren't? Or is there someone else that's doing something great with their fans that we need to borrow from that will help us continue to make sure they're coming to shows and we're selling merch and etc. and we're growing? But then there's some days where you know, Tripp and I maybe on the phone will have one of those like brainstorming, just hours of going in circles of what can we do, what can we do, what can we do. And there's times you reach the end of that conversation, you're like, I don't know if there's an answer. I don't know if there's a way to hack this. You know, at the end of the day, at least we got shows. At least we can play. I have the dream job right now. And some days, I guess it would be some days you live in the satisfaction, just the bliss and joy that you get to live this life. You get to do it. And there are people that care and you get to impact their lives. You know, like we just did the thing with St. Jude, went to St. Jude and toured the hospital. We've done that before, but we haven't done that since having children ourselves. So going there and seeing these kids in this circumstance, and you really appreciate the kids. You also really appreciate the parents, and you want to talk to the parents and impact them. But we have a song released a few months ago called Where I Belong. And Where I Belong, as of right now, it's not a, quote, hit. By like, no one in this town would be like, no one would tell me congrats on Where I Belong, because it hasn't hit any of the metrics that you would be making people lots of money on. And so no one's congratulating you on it, because that's how Nashville is. But you go to St. Jude, and I'm proud of that song. I love that song. My family likes it. You know, we like it. Go to St. Jude, and there was a mother and her little girl. They're going through chemo radiation right now. And she was like, hey, you know, I just, at the end of hanging out with them, we'd been with them for like an hour. She's like, I want to let you know that your song, Where I Belong, before we do chemo, before we do radiation, that's like our anthem. That's like our pump up song. Like, it's just like inspired us, and it's what's been getting us through this right now. So the fact that you have a song that maybe no one in this town would even pay attention to, because it's not the hottest song on a playlist or it's not on the charts, the fact there's real human beings out there that your music is impacting and impacting their life, that is why you do art. And that is what art can do. And that's why it's such an incredible, wonderful thing that we get to do this for a living. So there are some days where I bask in that and I'm like, man, like, how incredible it is. There's someone in Memphis right now playing our song and it's inspiring them. Then there's some days where I'm like, man, I wish our light show's bigger. What do we got to do to get that? You know, what do we got to do? What, you know, there's a bit of a game to all this. So there's days I want to play that game. Then there's days where it's like, I'm just the artist and I'm just happy to be here.
But you guys are putting a new album out next month.
Yes.
In January. The album's called We're Gonna Make It.
Yes.
There has to be some fire in you to even bother to put that out. You have to go, okay, this is for the fans, but this is only your second record.
Yeah.
A lot of bands have done a lot after their debut album.
Yeah.
So there's to some level you have to be thinking, I hope this record takes us a one step further, whatever that means.
Oh, 100%. And that's, you know, and I talked to an artist about this too. It's like, you can, like if I was just hanging out with a few artists the other night.
Who were you hanging out with?
Just people from our label, and then like some songwriters and like a film guy, you know, just like.
Okay. Like Dylan Carmichael or Mitchell Tenpenny?
They were there. It was like, we did a Christmas party. I was talking to Mitchell and Megan Patrick about this, you know, because the conversation ends up going here. Because what we end up doing as artists, we end up talking about our problems. Oh, I've got this thing. I've got this radio show I got to do. I got this shit, you know. They're the dream. They're what you wanted to do, but they can end up being, I got to get on a flight. I got to wake up at 4 a.m. because I got this gig, you know. So in that, you know, it's like a safe space, and you want to be the holistic, like, wonderful, like, you only do this for the love of music. But there's a lot of grind and a lot of work that goes into it. I was the other night, you know, it's like, hey, we can, because there was another person there that was being, you know, we don't know each other at all. Like, it was our first time meeting, because we went out afterwards to Losers, of course, that's where you go. I didn't know him very well. He didn't know me. And he was, you know, he was being a little artsy about it, which is fine. But it's like, hey, this is a safe space. Like, we all love art. Like, we all love music. That's why we're doing this. But if it was just art for art's sake, if you were just creating for creation's sake, it could stay in your bedroom. You know, it could just, you don't have to like have a release plan, and you don't have to like, you know, you don't. But
that's what I mean. You didn't have to put out Gray's Love Story.
But you do, you absolutely do it, because I think that you can do one and the same. You can believe in your art enough that you're like, I believe this music could impact people. So I'm going to fight on the business side of this so hard to make sure that it cuts through the noise and it gets into the hands of people so that it impacts them. But to do that, you know, it's a lot of work, and we're putting out this album, and you're absolutely thinking, hey, how do we have an edge? How do we make this a big release? How do we have a splash? But it's not just so like you can make money. Money's great, but it's so that you can impact lots of people, because I think our music is important. I think our songs are important, and I want to fight as hard as I can to get these messages out to people. And that does take a lot of work and a lot of, yeah, it's a game. It's how do we...
Is that the biggest motive? I don't get the sense that you're motivated by making the most amount of money. I get the sense that that does not motivate you.
No, no, that's... no.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, no, no. Oh, man, at this point in my
There's
life,
no way.
No, I have learned... I have friends that are not in music.
And they don't get it.
And well, but like post-pandemic, like we moved out to the suburbs. We like lived in the city, moved out. It was the country, and now it's become the suburbs. But we moved out, and we have friends who I just love dearly, and they're great people. But I have, because I used to only hang out with musicians and songwriters. Like, that was my only circle. Since moving kind of outside the city, I have friends that are in medical sales, and I have friends that are in construction, and I have friends that are in law. And I've definitely learned, oh, if you want to make money, there's lots of ways to, there's a lot of money.
Isn't that weird?
There.
Because I look at people that are on that path, and I go, that's not what I want to do. You go, I don't want to make money if it means I'm not doing this.
Yeah, yeah. And that would be, it's like, you know, I could absolutely drop all this and probably go like work for one of my neighbors and like make good money. But that's not, yeah, I've definitely come to terms where it's like, dude, if I wanted to make money, I would have done something else a long time ago. I want to make cool stuff and I want to make art. And
that's what motivates you.
Yeah, 100%.
That's why you want to put this record out.
Yeah,
and you want 100%. People to hear it.
Yeah.
And you want a bigger light show.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the motivation.
But even the bigger light show, that, it's not an ego thing. It's not that.
Well,
yeah.
Let it be an ego thing. Why can't it be an ego
thing?
Well,
it can be. Trust me, there's times when I look back at the Instagram that I'm tagging or whatever it is, I can look and be like, man, I look freaking cool in front of those lights.
Yes.
But I also am aware that people also hear with their eyes, and the better that our lights are, the more impact our music has on people. So it all comes back to like the impact that you have on people.
What do you think was the biggest moment where you had the biggest leap from something to something, where you got that big lighting rig, or something happened where you had nothing and then you really got something?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. It's like you've done this before or something. You're a pro. No, at this point, I have to really go back through memory lane because there's been quite a few. I mean, for people who don't know our story, like a real like folklore part that's totally true is that I was selling hot dogs at Bridgestone Arena and was working concessions, and while at the register saw Jay Joyce, who is a producer in town, and at the time he was like the guy. He's doing Eric Church, Little Big Town, Keith Urban, Zach Brown Band, Carrie Underwood. I mean, he was just doing it all, and I literally recognized him and saw him walk by and closed down my register and just went up to him and introduced myself in my Bridgestone uniform. Was like, hey man, like I make music, you know? And we got to talking and we swapped phone numbers, and I actually ended up going out to his studio. I texted and went out to the studio and played him some stuff. And that led to bringing the band in, and then we played him some stuff as a band, and then he started working with us. That went from us being like literally guys just working odd jobs, playing like to two people in
Nashville.
That
was pivotal.
That was a huge moment, because when he was in our corner, now people in Nashville are like, okay, like even if this band sucks, like there's something here because this guy's in their corner. And then signing our first record deal, signed to Sony Music, that was definitely okay. It just we kept building our team to where it was like, hey, it went from just five friends and some songs to, okay, we have this producer. Now we have this team, this label and a booking agency, getting, you know, we're with WME. They came before the label. That was huge because it wasn't me faking that I was somebody else. Like, hey, I'd like I represent Lanco, you know, and it's having someone represent us. So early on, those were big, big moments.
That story has always blown my mind, because how many times are you in a position to do something and you let the position pass you by?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I could go up to Jay Joyce. There's Jay Joyce. I should go up to him. And then you don't, because didn't you leave your shift? Weren't people yelling at you? Or maybe not yelling at you, but they were annoyed that you left your hot dog stand. How many moments in my life do I go, oh my God, I should have gone up to Steven Tyler when I saw him and just said, hey. Now, I don't know what that would have done for me, but I go, I should have done it.
Yeah.
And you did it.
Yeah, I did it.
And because you thought there was a lot at stake if you didn't, or why?
I do think, I think subconsciously I felt there was a lot at stake. But I also was such a fan, and I just, as an art, I mean, you know, at that point in my life, maybe I had like a total of 20 people in my life come up to me and said they liked what I did. So this would be like if I played a coffee shop and one person in the corner drinking latte is like, hey, I like that one song you did. That felt really good. Oh, cool. That's so I know that no matter how successful someone is, even that, even if, you know, it's weird when you see like the paparazzi thing, the people in Hollywood, and they, I understand that's a different animal. But like when you hear stories of like a fan approaching someone and the person gets annoyed, it's like, I mean, well, you put yourself in the position of wanting to be appreciated and wanting people to be fans.
But I don't think Jay does that. I don't think he puts himself in a position to want to be appreciated. He's kind of a homebody, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's a recluse. No, and I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah,
Everyone in Nashville like walks around and they all are at all the places. I had no idea at the time that that was a one in a million thing for him to even be out of his house because he like literally lives at his studio. I don't know if he literally does anymore, but at the time he was, but he literally was living at his studio. So he didn't leave. And so, yeah, that was a, I didn't know that was a one in a million. Even seeing Jay out in the world was rare. And I didn't know the opportunity that I was.
Wait. So you go up to Jay and you say, hey man, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why he took you seriously. No offense.
Oh yeah. So I
just don't get it.
No, I think one of the reasons is that because, now, I don't know if it's subconscious. It'd be interesting to like talk to myself that night and like interview myself to know, because I can't really remember exactly whether I was being strategic or whether I was subconsciously being strategic. I'm trying to be like totally trans. This many years removed now, I don't really care like if the folklore isn't as interesting. Like, there may be a chance I was being strategic in this, but there would have been a real desire for me to know. I asked him quickly. I was like, "Hey, I'm a big fan," but I know in those situations, like, "Hey, how do I turn this from just, oh, thanks, man, appreciate you, and then we go our separate ways?" I immediately asked him a question about, like, the drums on Creepin' from Eric Church. Like, I was like, hey, I do have a question just real quick. Like, was that, like, a sample, or was that, like, an actual, like, live drum take? Because there's, like, a delay on it. Like, is there a delay on that snare? And getting into that, that opened him up to, like, oh, this guy, like, he's not just appreciating me because I'm a famous producer. He's appreciating me because he is noticing a specific snare sound, and that kind of, I think that kind of cut through the noise of going from just a fan to like a fellow creative.
And maybe he doesn't even get recognized that often, because to be honest, I don't even know if I could pick him out in a crowd.
Yeah,
like, I don't even know what he looks like.
And I think, to be totally honest, I think that at that time, like, if he was getting recognized, it would be just a person in Nashville that was making money from him and just, like, acknowledged it was only an opportunity. Like, oh, man, I love what you did. Like, congrats on your CMA. Congrats on your Grammy. Like, it'd be that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
So I think for him to be out in public and a person want to talk about drums was like, oh,
but
cool.
then you do this thing which is so smart, is you're, I don't know what you're doing, you're driving down the highway and what happens, Eric Church comes or something, and you go, I got Jay Joyce's number, I'm gonna call him, and that changed your life.
Yeah,
don't you think that changed your life, the fact that you made that decision to call him?
Yeah, it 100% changed my life. And I'll say this, it was that thing where, like, it's easy to jump into the water once. You know, like, you're on the the high dive, and you're like, oh, I just got to do it. And you jump. And I was celebrated for that. You know, I left and told Tripp, and I was like, dude, look at this number I got. And I got the number. And to do that again, okay, now you're shivering, you're freezing cold. Like, okay, that was wild that I did that. Now you got to jump again, because you got to actually make something happen from this. And it's one thing to just like swap numbers and be like, oh, cool, man. You know, now it's like, now you got to like ask him if he was serious and call him on his bluff if he wasn't. And that was like, you know, I am like, this is going to sound like a weird statement. We don't have to get into this if we can. I'm down for whatever. But like, I am a religious person. I have a prayer life. I believe in God. And even in that, there's a part of that story that I'll give you the exclusive to.
Give me the exclusive.
Yeah, but, you know, in that moment, like, I had been working at Bridgestone, and I had come out of college, and, you know, I did have an ego. Like, I'm going to go to Nashville and really shake things up, and I'm going to be the guy. That wasn't happening at all. And I was working this job at Bridgestone. It was like a minimum wage job. I was making no money, and it's kind of like a grimy, it's just a tough job. And I kind of feel like at first when I got that job, it was that thing like, I'll be here 6 weeks and then I'm going to make it. You know that? And
how long were you there?
Oh, I don't, maybe a year.
Yeah.
And I'd also worked at the carpet warehouse with Trip for like a few weeks. And
where
was
you
like,
guys
all right,
would
that's
rehearse.
Not,
yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't for me. And it was just like nothing was happening. And it was a thing, okay, I can't like have this illusion anymore that I'm better than everyone around me and that like this is part of, you know, like, you just wait, you're all going to be here working concessions and I'm going to be on that stage. Like, I, what's crazy is I had that attitude and it actually happened. Like, I have played Bridgestone Arena on the stage, but honestly, I had an attitude at the time of like, you just wait, like that's going to happen. But it was causing me to not be a faithful employee or maybe even a faithful person or maybe even a nice person to be around. And that night that I met Jay, I literally took my lunch break. I grabbed a hot dog. I sat on like a little crate in the back and I was really praying to God. I was like, God, I have not been faithful. Like, you've given me a job. Like, I have a job. There's a lot of people that don't even have this. There's literally people that would do anything to even have a job to pay their bills. And I haven't appreciated that. I don't know if I've been a nice person to be around or a nice employee. I haven't talked, I haven't asked any of these people how their day was, or, you know, I've been so focused on me that you've placed me here. This is where I am now. I don't want to be here forever. I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but as long as I am here, I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to be faithful and I'm going to be thankful for what I've been given. And I literally finished my hot dog and got up from that crate and went back to my register, and that was when I saw Jay walk by. So you can call that God, you can call that the universe, whatever your worldview is.
But you then
is.
Ditched your employees
yeah,
to go chase
I was like,
Jay.
Yeah, I haven't
so
been.
You took
I'll
it
be,
for granted so yeah, quick.
I'll be a good employee, except for that. No, I went back and I apologized
no,
to
you
my
didn't.
Employees.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah.
What'd you say? You said, I'm sorry.
Yes,
that.
And I told them. The thing is, they like knew. They knew I was like the songwriter trying
yeah,
to
yeah,
make
yeah.
it. So I went back and I was like, hey, sorry. And I explained what happened. And they were all like happy for it. They're like, that's awesome, you know, as opposed to walking.
Oh, you explained that you met Jay.
Yeah.
Or,
and I,
oh,
I
yes.
explained what had just happened.
Right.
So they
and
knew,
they forgave you.
And they were like, oh, that's really, as opposed to being like, get over it. Like, you have no
yeah,
idea
yeah.
what just happened to me, you know. But then it was kind of the same thing. Like, I had this number and I was driving. And I literally was in the car in traffic praying. I was like, God, what am I supposed to do? Like, what? Like, I'm not going to call Jay. That's like, he was bluffing. Everyone in Nashville's like, oh yeah, maybe we can do something. It never happens. And then, yeah, Springsteen came on the radio, Eric Church. And I took it as a sign. I was like, that's weird. Okay. And I pulled into a Publix parking lot and pulled up my phone and called Jay. I was like, hey man, this is really random. Sorry to bother you, but I met you at Bridgestone. You gave me your number. You said maybe. And he literally goes, what do you want to, like, why are you calling me? I was like, oh, well, you said to hit you up because I'm a songwriter. He goes, kid, what do you want to do? Like, why are you calling? What do you want from
and
me?
And do you think he really said with that attitude?
No, absolutely. Dude, 100%.
Yes.
That's his. That's anyone that knows Jay that's listening knows that's how he would say
it. But that is a generous attitude, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was trying to get to the core of how he could help you.
Yeah, he's like, we're not going to fluff. What do you want?
What do you want?
Tell me, what can I do for you? And I was like, man, I want it. I want the thing. I want to be an artist. I want to be a songwriter. I want records. And I literally gave him this spiel of like, it all comes down to this moment. I've dreamed of this my whole life. Like, I want to be a songwriter. I want to be an artist. I want to tour the world. I want to do it, man. And like, he was like, all right, well, come over tomorrow. And it was that short. Like, and I went the next day and,
I'd be thinking, maybe this guy's not as busy as I think he is. Yeah. He's got so much free time.
Yeah. No, but I, you know, and then we went and I played him some songs. He was like, well, I want to hear the band. So the band came back like a week later. And it was funny because he had just done a joint venture with Warner Chappell, like a publishing joint venture. And they were coming to have like their celebration party that day. And he was like, hey, why don't you play some songs for him? And I was like, cool. And so people started like filing in. And like, I went up to him and was like, hey, so what are we doing? Like, are we going to play a show or do you want to just like play a song or do I need to talk? And he was walking and I was like following him like a little puppy dog. Like, hey, we didn't rehearse really. Like, what do you want me? And he turns around, he's smoking a cigarette, which I think he's quit smoking since then, but he used to be like a chain smoker and it was, you know, always like his thing. But he pulled his cigarette out and he just goes, do you want to do this? You said this is what you wanted to do, right? And I was like, well, yeah, but, and he goes, then just go F and do it. And walked away. And that kind of began a mantra for the rest of my life. anytime if we're doing television, we're doing Jimmy Kimmel or Ellen, or we're doing an award show, it's like when you start having these questions, these anxieties, these, hey, do you want to do this? Go do it. Like, it sounds simple, but really sometimes it is that simple. Like, if you don't want to do this, go get the job. Go work for your, go do something. But it's what you want to do, right? So go do it. Maybe it'll crash and burn. Maybe it'll be awful. Maybe it won't turn to anything. Maybe it'll be awesome. Maybe it'll grow. But you got just, this is what you want to do.
Do you think he saw something in you musically, or do you think he just didn't care? His thing was like, this kid wants to do it. I'm going to just tell this kid, go do it. Or do you think he was, he saw some vision? Like, what? Why do you think he took to you?
Yeah, I think, not to like toot my own horn.
Toot your horn.
Yeah, he did see something musically, because I went on to work with him in publishing, and I had actually like a writer studio at his studio, and he would, what the opportunity I got, I didn't realize how many, I mean, he was shopping for writers. So like there were lots of people coming in, and I would like stand in the kitchen and listen and be like, oh man, I'm glad he signed me, because I'm not good. Like these people, like I would just be blown away by who, and like people that I was fans of, like were trying to, and I would hear people and be like, oh man, like I'm going to get booted out of here so fast because better people are starting to come in. And he didn't work with any of them. And that did, I would ask him like, what? I eventually did. Like, what did you see? And like, what it, but you know.
And what did he say?
Ultimately what it was that in the 20 teens, you had this just, you really, Nashville's always kind of had a formula, but you really started having a formula. Like after FGL, everything turned into tan legs, tailgates, cold beer, truck bed, tailgate, Georgia plate, all that stuff. I did none of that, but it was still country. It was still like inspired by small town, blue collar, country kind of life, but not that it was different language. I hadn't been, and he had said like, I hadn't been infested yet by that. Like I hadn't been, you know, injected with the Nashville language or the Nashville lingo, or like I was so innocent and naive to it that it didn't even like, I would write a song and write three different choruses. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to say truck, and you're supposed to say beer, and you're supposed to make sure every chorus is the same, and the song has to be under 3 minutes because radio doesn't want to play anything over 3 minutes because you're cutting into their advertising. Like all these things, it was just raw and it was fresh and it was good. I mean, I when I went and played him songs, I played him Greatest Love Story. Like that was, we had that in our catalog. So he was hearing songs that were country and rock and fresh, but yeah, it was different than a lot of things going on that I admired. I thought like people would come in and I'd like eavesdrop and hear. I'd be like, dude, that is sick. And he'd be like, yeah, but that's just like the other three things that have come in here. Like, yeah. So it was just different. Lanco is different.
So when
different.
You go into the studio with Jay and you record Greatest Love Story or Born to Love You, mm-hmm. or whatever, what is the genius of Jay? Why could you have not done it without him?
Oh yeah. Especially at the time. Now, I think, you know, it's been 10 years now. We understand ourselves a lot more than we did at the time. Like, it's kind of been like the student becoming the master. Like, when we work with Jay on this record, he kind of hits the red button and we play, because we've learned a lot of what he taught us, which was talking about open G tuning. Like, why does the guitar have to be tuned that way? Like, why does you did the same four chords over and over. Why don't we do a different chord? Like, why don't you repeat that line? Why does the second verse have to be half as long as the first? Like all these rules, Jay will break all the rules, but then build it up in a very interesting and cool way. Right now it's just drums, guitar, and bass. Why don't we put a timpani on it? Like, why don't we put a xylophone? Like, why don't we sample your vocal backwards and have that layered in under? Like all these little things that can be, it's more than just like getting there, play the song. And then even with songwriting, like, why does it have to be perfect? Like, why does that have to rhyme? Who said that has to rhyme? Like, no, like, Hallelujah Nights, our title track on that first record, like, there, like, the rhyme scheme in there and the phrasing is nuts. And that was when I was, like, starting to learn about Nashville songwriting and being like, hey, this doesn't really, why doesn't it work? No one cares. In Des Moines, Iowa, they do not care. It just has to feel good. Like, just go with your gut, but make sure it's good at the same time. It can't be sloppy.
Yeah, right,
the
right.
Pocket, you have to learn how to play together. Like doing a vocal take, almost everyone in Nashville, just punch in the third line. If you're on the second verse, hey, hit that line again. Jay literally would make, I've been trained to, we would start all the way back. We'd be on the second verse. Hey, that line was, I didn't, he said, I didn't, okay, another thing, like, you're not allowed to read lyrics with Jay. Cannot read lyrics. It, like, I remember one time I went in there and I'd just written the song for the record. And I had my, he goes, are you reading? He was in another room. Like, he goes, man, I just don't believe, I do not believe what you're singing. It just sounds, you're like singing notes. Like, you're not telling me the story. And I was like, oh. And he's like, wait, what's on your phone? And I was like, oh, the word. He goes, you're reading the song? You're reading the, all right, we're not recording this. Go home, play this on the road, then come back and record it. And I did, and I learned the song and sang it.
What song was that?
Singing at the Stars. It was on our first record. And he played me an A-B of the first vocal passes. Now I was singing on pitch. Like, all those things were there. But the difference between that take and after we had played it at a few shows was totally different. So, like, to this day now, even when I write, I won't write down, someone has to write down lyrics, but I won't write down the lyrics because I'll be like, you know, if I can't remember it, how is a fan going to remember the lyrics? Like, or if I don't believe it, like, I want to make sure I'm singing it like it's me. And so just little things like that, Jay just trains you, like, to, hey, but yeah, if you're doing, like, second verse, he'd be like, sing that third line and start the song over. And I have to sing the whole song again just to capture that third line, because he wants the energy coming out of the first verse, first chorus, second verse, third line, and second verse. I want it to match the energy of the rest of the song.
Is he crazy or is he right? You think that really has an impact? Or you think you could just punch in the third verse and you know, call it a day or whatever?
You definitely can. I mean, it's just different. It's just a process. And it's there's all different kinds of – and he'll admit this. He'll be like, man, there's different guys have different methods, and if I had success doing it their way – then I would do it that way. But I've had success with my process and my way, so that's what this is. And I think that's with, and like, that's in the very beginning of this podcast, I'm saying, like, I'm not qualified to speak on anything. It's because we are talking about music and art. It's subjective. I'm just talking about what's worked for me and what I believe and what I think. And I, you could immediately tomorrow get someone else in here that would have something different to say all the way around. And it's worked. And they've made millions. And it's been, and great. That's their process. We all have different processes as creatives and as artists, and that's his process. It's not the only way. It's his way. There's things that we've adopted from that process. There are absolutely things that I've been like, that's not necessary. We're going to do it different. And we don't do everything the way Jay does it. There are some things that Jay does it this way, and I'm like, I think that's unnecessary. I don't like – everything is like on a two-channel mix in his studio. And I'm like – I don't think that you need, I think that we can all have our own mix and our own channels. We're going to do it different. We just all have different processes.
I'm running out of time here. I'm worried I'm getting vortexed by, Brand has this thing where he says he vortexes people. He can pull you in with conversation and the time can go by. And I experienced the CMA night at a CMA party. 5 hours later, it was 2 a.m. I was still talking to Brandon. I couldn't believe it. The new album is coming out January 17th.
Yes.
We're going to make it.
Yes.
There's a couple songs. I can't believe that. If I had more time, I would talk about how this is only your sophomore album. Which
I know.
Just,
I feel this
is
the,
crazy to me.
This is my fault. I feel like.
What's your fault?
Everyone that works with me is going to listen to this or watch this and punch me in the face, because, like, dude, you don't have the ability to shut up, so you didn't even allow this podcast to get to promoting the new music.
We're going
to
talk about the new music.
All right.
We grew up together.
Yes.
This is a great song.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
It's not, the hook is not what you think. The hook is that your kid and you grew up together. You have two kids.
Yes.
Is that what the song is about?
It is what the song is about, yeah. And we wrote it with Corey Asbury.
Yeah, tell me how you wrote it.
Yeah, so
I'm trying to win you your team back here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to win love back from the team.
Yes, We Grew Up Together is a new song on our new album. It's one of my favorite songs, literally one of my favorite songs I've ever written. It's the last song that we wrote for the album. And wrote it, Corey Asbury, he's an artist. He had a really big song called Reckless Love. But he writes country music, writes Christian music, he can write it all. But he's a friend of ours, and he came in, the album was done. Like, we were kind of just writing, like, because we had some studio time left over. But he came in, we started writing another song, and it was, I don't know, I wasn't feeling it. So we started talking about just our families, and he said he had, like, a 15, 16-year-old, and he's my age. I was like, whoa, you started young. And he's like, yeah, man, we honestly kind of grew up together. So I was like, all right, that's, we got to write that.
That's such a great hook, right?
Yeah.
That's
and so good. And it's so true because I was much older than him when I had my kid, but I felt the same way. Like, you're trying to teach your kid patience, realizing I'm not being patient with you. You know, you're trying to teach your kid these lessons.
And be patient.
Like, yeah, exactly. Why can't you just be patient? And then you're always like, oh, wait, I need that lesson in my own life. I just got off a call that I should have been more patient. And so you realize that you're kind of growing up, learning different lessons, but you're also growing up while your child's growing up. So yeah, Corey, we wrote it together. And then he, because the story, it's so cool. I think it's so cool to have two different writers and artists on it that have had the same perspective, but different stories. So yeah, he's on the track, and yeah, I love the song, and it's had a really big reaction already. And so that's been fun. Just people telling us how it's impacted them and kind of sharing their stories about their own parenthood journey. Yeah.
This album's coming out. You guys are hitting the road. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling I'm going to get calls after this to cut this part out. And if you're hearing it, just know I didn't get that call. It's not because I ignored the call. You guys, it's been how many years since this debut album? 6 mm-hmm. years.
Yeah.
Do you think you guys were not given the opportunity at a prior label home to put out enough music to get to this point? The fans want music.
Yeah.
Do you think you were given the opportunity to do that? Or do you think, I don't know what happens. COVID gets in the way. Other people on the roster get in the way and they take up space. Were you given a fair shot to put out the second record in a timely manner?
No, we were not given a fair shot. For this could be its own podcast episode. But all of the above, everything you just said, we had the number one debut album in the country. We were the first band to debut with a number one album since Alabama. We were selling out shows literally in the entire U.S., sold out shows in the UK, headlining festival in Australia, just winning an ACM. It's happening. It happened. And I don't want to dive too much into this. I mean, we can, but COVID does happen. And these are businesses that you're working with, and they've got inventory, and they've got to prioritize what inventory they're focusing on. And even though you're doing well, if you're talking about these global companies, you're not doing as well as maybe some other giant, huge international act. So you've got to battle that. And then in the time, you know, you have a distribution issue where it's like, okay, everyone's trying to figure out and adjust to this new landscape where everyone's at their house and blah, blah, blah. And then by the time the world comes back, yeah, we have another album that will just never be. We had a second album. And it will just never be heard, because even by the time we got to a new partner and all this stuff, that's not who we are anymore. That's not what we want to sing about. Your job is to catch fans up to who you are and where you're going and where you've been. And that second album was directly after Hallelujah Nights. We were like recording it later that year. Years later, that is not our, it's just not what we are in life. And so we definitely, and you know, we know that, people know that, people in the industry know that. We got dealt a tough hand. You know, we were hitting blackjacks in 19s, 20s, 21s, and we got dealt quite a few 11, 12, 13s. 11's good, but 13, 14, 15s in a row for a couple years. And you have to completely reset and get new team members. And you have to, it's a business. You have to start it kind of all over. And so we're just now kind of trying to pick up where we left off. But it's, you know, it's okay. And we've learned from it. We've grown from it. And we're not sad about it. There have been times we have been sad about it. There's times, you know, it really is. I mean, COVID, not even musicians, people lost their livelihoods. They lost their businesses, their restaurants. We are a small business. Even if we're internationally headlining, we're a small business. Talk to people that like have big boy jobs and make real. Lanco's most musicians are a small business. Until you get to like the Morgan Wallen level, it's all small businesses. Our small business all but shut down. And we had to completely regroup and rebuild it. And there were absolutely times for us being like, this can't be real. This can't be happening. Like, how could this be happening to us? But a world event did this to a lot of people. And we're fortunate enough to come out on the other side of it with a great team and great music and stuff that we're really proud of, and each other and friendships, and we still like each other and we're gonna make it.
Here's the point. The point is, Landco has a new album coming out January 17th. We're gonna make it. It's literally the name of the album.
Yes.
It's got some great music on it. One of my favorite songs being We Grew Up Together. It was the last edition. Half of this record was produced by Jay Joyce. Jay has been by Landco's side the entire time. Who produced the other half? Some
Jared Conner.
Jared Conner produced the other. Let's give him a little bit of
Jared
a name
Conner.
Check.
And us. We also,
and
like
Landco.
I said, students become the master. We
the
also have to dive in there and produce a little.
Have become the master. That is the point I'm trying to get at. And they're hitting the road. They have a new guitar player, Tim Evans. Evans?
Yes.
Tim Evans.
Yeah.
He's on the road. He looks a little bit like the old guitar player. And I have to wonder if that's why he got the gig. But he sounds fantastic. And he's on the road with Landco. These guys are doing it. They're a rock band. And I think they're just getting started because they've only put out one album.
Yeah, we're literally just getting started.
You can't judge a band off the first album, love it or hate it. You need to listen to the second album, the sophomore album, which is coming out January 17th. It might even be out by the time you listen to this. My favorite Landco song that I don't think has ever gotten the credit that it deserves. This is my favorite Landco song by a mile. Low Class Lovers.
Yeah.
Or is it high? It's Low Class.
Low Class Lovers
Living the High Life.
That's my favorite Landco song.
No, it's not.
I'm not just saying that. It really is.
When that came out, I played that song 10 times in a row. That is the best Landco song. The breakdown at the end. Did Jay Joyce come up with that breakdown at the end?
That was a very, the guys were, because I wrote that by myself. And I had the words, and I literally said, I was like, I don't know how to do this. Like, this is where Jay is so great. I was like, I don't know how to do this, but I want this, like, country rock, blue-collar opera anthem, like a Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's very Springsteen,
yeah,
right?
I want different phases. I want different acts. I want up. I want down. I want up. Help me. And we got together in a circle and just started with the beginning, and then would just go up and down this mountain, you know, through these valleys and back up the mountain, and happened real organically. But it was definitely collaborative. But Jay, I was so happy to be in the studio with Jay for a song like that, because like I have an overall vision. I want big. I want soft. I want dynamics. I want this to be like, you know, just this journey.
This is your jungle land.
Yes.
Maybe that's a little dramatic. Maybe that's not it. But I love that song.
Thank you.
That is such a great. Is that in the live set?
Oh yeah, it's our. Not to spoiler alert, but that's our closing number every night. Because
oh
just
my
is,
god, do I love that song? Yeah. I gotta come to a show.
Yeah,
I gotta start a band too. I gotta get in a band. Then maybe I too can have a Jay Joyce moment.
Dude, trust me. I'm looking around. You started a band. It's this podcast is a band.
This is my band.
Yeah,
this is my band.
Yeah, you did it.
Landco. You have to go see him on the road. Brandon Lancaster is in the studio. Listen, I love you. I don't even really know you. I think this is the second time.
That's
we've
deep,
ever
but
hung
I
lo- out.
If you said it first, I'll say it back. I love you too.
But man. I love you. And I love the band. I got to come see the band.
You do. And I know a guy that can get you some tickets.
I was fishing for that. Thank you. We're wrapping up here. Brandon, thanks for coming to the studio.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the album to come out.
Thank you.
And we'll do it again.
Let's do it again.
I want next time you come on, I want to ask you about Eric Church and being at that concert, Eric Church Live, the famous live concert. Weren't you at that show?
Yeah.
And that's when you decided that you needed to become a musician.
In Chattanooga. I was doing music and doing the thing and playing, and I went and saw him at the Tivoli that's now, a live album. And when I saw that and felt the energy of that night, that was.
And when you listen back, do you still feel that when you listen to the live record?
It's still one of my top favorite albums of all time, because it really, that album captures what I was feeling that night. There was just an energy in that room that really was a defining moment in my life. And when I hear that record, I can still feel that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Next time I want to ask you about that.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're wrapping up here. All right. Brandon Lancaster on the podcast. Cut it.